Williams, who is the Member of Parliament for Manurewa. Kia ora, Arena.
Kia ora, thank you for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure. Hey, Arena, first of all, we've seen the march in Auckland some 2 weeks ago around the fast track bill, a real softening of government support. As a Member of Parliament based here in South Auckland, does that give you some hope in terms of not just perhaps the possibility of this government being a one-term government, but them softening their approach?
Interesting question. I don't think we're going to see a big change in the way that this government have doubled down on their policies when they've been criticised. I think you've seen the Prime Minister's response to that fast-track protest in Auckland, where tens of thousands of Aucklanders turned out on the streets to protest it, where he was dismissive of that. I saw that as a real outpouring of community support for Labor's position that the fast-track bill goes way too far and puts economic considerations ahead of environmental concerns and really the long-term good of the country. But you saw a number of government ministers really entrenching their positions in response to that. So I think we can expect more of that to come.
But I just want to talk about a political perspective before I ask some community-based questions, Bomber. Arena has said what she said, and the Prime Minister, the ministers, they might not be concerned, but when you've got a whole bunch of seats that are only held by paper-thin majorities, 2 to 3, maybe 4%, will the dissent come from the backbenchers, or are they just simply happy to be there?
I think that the economic conditions that we're about to go into, exacerbated by the government borrowing more than Labor ever did for tax cuts, I think that that economic situation is going to put so much pressure on this government, a sense of panic will start creeping in very quickly, particularly when the polls go into freefall. We've never seen polling numbers the way we have in the modern MMP environment. This government has lost so much support, and I think that that is due in part to the electorate not really understanding what they were getting when these three parties got together, and the extremism of the policy platforms, I think it's just scaring the bejesus out of middle voters. And that's why you're seeing Labor pick up, despite not actually coming to the table with any new policies yet. That's quite extraordinary.
Look, you know, this government is anti-Māori, anti-treaty, anti-environmentalist perspective, also anti-renter agenda. You've been running outreach in your community regarding those type of issues, 90 days rules, diminishing sick leave rights for 500,000 people that currently work part-time, and the deregulation of our health and safety and employment. What are your people saying about this sort of thing, Arena, when you're going out there and talking in the community?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's absolutely been the focus of the last 2 weeks when I've been going and meeting with people in Manurewa on street corners and door knocking, and I've been having public meetings too. But I just want to pick up on something that Bomber said there. You know, when we think about what New Zealanders expected from this government, they said at the election time that their number one priority would be addressing the cost of living. But what we're getting is those extreme policies that aren't delivering that at all.
Right.
On Friday, we're expecting the Commerce Commission, it's the government's watchdog on things like supermarkets and banks, to deliver a decision which will allow a merger of foodstuff supermarkets to go ahead and will further consolidate market power. And this government, you know, was out on the stump saying that they wanted to see a third entrant in the supermarket sector to bring down prices, where in fact they're overseeing a consolidation of market power that flies in the face of the reforms that Labor started bringing in to get that under control. Now, to your question about renters' rights, that was something that, you know, it has really got people fired up, and again, is about the expectations on this government. The National Party used to be a party that promoted home ownership. Keith Holyoake, when he was the Prime Minister, pinned his career on getting more New Zealanders into homes. But now this government is making active policy decisions which prioritise landlords, and mega landlords at that, which is people who own more than seven houses being the beneficiaries of these policies. And that's coming into the housing market to the detriment of first-time buyers and of renters. Mm. But it's also affecting mum and dads who own just one home, who would have seen a real slump in house prices since National was elected. And that'll be really worrying people when interest rates are still remaining high and mortgages are still very, very costly.
I don't know, this new legislation that the government have put through for the landlords, where they're able to evict you without any cause for, within 90 days, talk us through the kind of friction that that causes people in your community, that constant churn of having to find a new place to move to, when you've got landlords that want to maximise their rentals. How damaging is that for communities like yours in Manurewa?
Yeah, it's a real worry because there are 29,000 people in Manurewa who are renters.
Yep.
Those are communities who are at risk of now being evicted for no reason by the 90-day no-cause evictions being back, which means that at the end of the up to the 90-day period, they can be evicted for no reason, but they can still then be evicted for all sorts of reasons after that. Mm. And at the end of a fixed-term tenancy, landlords are also able to give them notice without cause.
Mm.
So what you know, I'm seeing on the ground is that when we're having these clinics to let people know about their rights, you know, it's mums with kids in tow who are coming along after school to talk to me about how their rights are changing and why. You know, they've already had to move some of them 2-3 times in a sort of 5-year period where they've got their, say, 11-year-old who's been through a number of different schools, or they're really at the mercy of their landlords who are trying to up the rent and they're trying to scrabble to pay for that on what is a pretty fixed income. Those are the people who are most affected, but it has this wider effect on the neighbourhoods that they live in.
Yes.
You know, these are parents who are really beholden to their landlords because they don't want to move, and so they're taking on extra work, extra hours, cleaning, a second job, and they're not able to get involved in community groups, get along to the school to volunteer. They don't know people around them. They don't know their neighbours, and that really hurts our neighbourhoods.
And what we're seeing is younger people moving 4 or 5 times. They move to another school, but what happens to those 15, 16-year-olds? Why might they become totally disengaged from the education system? Because simply the constant move simply disrupts their lives and their community networks.
Well, you create a transient community. Mm. And I mean, if we look at the research that was released this week, it shows that New Zealand has the most expensive rentals in the OECD. How does that stunt our communities? I mean, we have the highest rentals in the OECD. How does that play out in terms of the dynamics within our communities?
Yeah, well, exactly. It means that housing costs are the number one thing that most households are spending their money on in New Zealand. It means that savings loses out. We don't have any household resiliency in this country and personal savings are so low. But I'm also worried about the long-term impact of that. If the National government is successful in changing the housing market so that more and more landlords own more and more houses, but fewer and fewer ordinary people own the house that they live in, then we will end up in a situation where young people in New Zealand have nothing to save for and have nothing to hope for. Why not get into big credit card debt if, you know, you can easily access credit in New Zealand after National had taken away the triple CFA protections for that? You can rack up tens of thousands of dollars of personal debt in your 20s. You're never going to be able to buy a home under the National Party's current policy choices. So why not make those kinds of financial decisions? I think it's really worrying. And I want to make the point that, you know, back when Labor was in opposition last time, we were campaigning against loan sharks in places like South Auckland and Porirua. But now, under the National Government settings, we have first-tier lenders who are loaning out 33% interest on credit cards. Gem Finance is offering 33% for credit cards that people are signing up for. There's also a proliferation of debt by companies like Afterpay. And you've really got to say
to yourself,
totally, they're pushing this debt onto younger people, and it creates a real disparate situation for people who get into that kind of financial situation and don't have those dreams of actually getting ahead in life and doing better for their families because they've had it taken away from them.
Martin, you've talked a lot about indebtedness over the last little while. You've talked about student loans. I read a story the other day where a supernumerant was still paying off the student loan. Private debt is increasing because people are having to spend beyond their means because of the increasing prices of our kai, of our rent. Insurances. People are defaulting on their insurances at record rates, which will mean that people who do pay the insurances have to pay more. So that indebtedness is a really untold story amongst our community, Martin.
Student loans were one of the worst social policies this country has ever come up with. We have indebted all of our young people. The first thing they do to try and get out from under that debt is move offshore to earn more money, and we don't get them back. I think that over 50% of people who are on welfare owe money to the state. Part of that is from overpayments by the state, not the not them welfare defrauding it. It's overpayments, and also loans that are given for things that people just can't afford. We have mountains of debt. We've got people who are enslaved in debt, and I think that one of the things that we've got to come forward with is a means for those people to work in volunteer positions to help pay that debt off and get it wiped. Because what are we actually promising our citizens? A life of debt? A life of debt where you will only be free from that debt when you die. That's not living.
Martin Arena, not that long ago, I used to run a huge payroll, some 400 staff, mainly people based in Mangere, Otara, South Auckland, very good souls working for not much more than the minimum wage through a non-for-profit organisation. And this is what would happen. You could almost bet your bottom dollar on it. They would get work. The following week, I would get a document from, it was back in those days, it was American Express, or from Visa, saying, does this person work more than 30 hours a week, and do they earn such and such a dollar amount per week? And I would say, and I would talk to the workers and say, you really want to get into this? You really shouldn't get into this. But, you know, they'd sign it up, they'd get $2,000. It'll be spent within a week or so, you know. And here's the other thing. Again, you could bet your bottom dollar, drop a dime on it 6 weeks later, you get your first debt collection letter saying we're going to deduct 40% out of people's wages. And that carries on today.
It shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. Today, only 35% of Māori and 20% of Pacifica own their own homes. Is this housing crisis adding to the institutional poverty that hits Māori and Pacifica communities hardest?
Those are interesting statistics because they actually don't even tell the full picture. In somewhere like South Auckland, Pacific home ownership is down to 8%.
Wow.
8%.
Yeah, and we know that kind of has an intergenerational impact because with these debt issues that we're talking about, it's very hard to get yourself out of that kind of personal debt if you don't have friends and family who can support you to be able to do that. Mm. I met with a really cool organisation recently called Money Sweet Spot, and their loans are designed around a social program to help people into home ownership and to consolidate any debt that's outstanding so that they can actually save for a home. But what they're seeing is, particularly for Māori and Pacific people in their 20s, that it's more and more common in the last few years to have so much debt that they can't actually find a path to helping someone into home ownership. But in fact, they're juggling and struggling to the extent that it's impossible to make things add up, and you've just got to wonder how these companies are getting into these positions. And I think we really need to think about in New Zealand how we're addressing this, because it entrenches that kind of intergenerational trap for Māori and Pacific families who started with nothing, and it's really hard to accumulate the kind of wealth that you need to get into house ownership now. I also want to tell you about how in budget urgency the government used that special time where the budget passes through the House and the government sort of gets a few extra hours of Parliament's sitting schedule to pass kind of whatever it wants, to pass through rules which would make it easier to prosecute people who owed student loan debt.
Right.
You know, this is a specific strategy of theirs to stop people at the border when they were coming home who had student loans outstanding and make them pay what they owed. And it was also a strategy to make it easier for IRD to chase down people with student loan debt. They know that that debt is really hard for IRD to chase yes. because often you don't know where people are overseas.
Mm.
But it's more of this sort of posturing around revenue gathering from people who owe student loan debt and not really a strategy about getting these people home in the first place.
Mm. Exactly.
So they contribute to our economy with their skills and the things that they have learned from university or polytech where they have studied.
And also I remember those stories. And it seemed to me that there was a lot of racial profiling involved in that, you know.
Mm.
The names that were on the front page or the second page of the Herald were often Pacifica or Māori names. So, you know, it seemed to seems to me that they were picking off the easy targets arena.
It does seem like a culture of blaming individuals without having a real plan for economic development. You know, this idea that a few individuals who will be targeted by IRD to pay back their student loans faster when they're overseas will somehow plug the deficit that the government have created with their choices to pay landlords $2.9 billion of the tax take through the changes to the interest deductibility rules. It's farcical. It's some look over here politics while we really have handouts for people who do not need it.
I don't know. Since 2021, people aligned with the property industry have donated more than $2.5 million to political parties. More than half of the cash from the property industry went to the National Party, 53%, followed by ACT, 32%, and New Zealand First, 12%. Labor received just 2%. Who is ensuring the rights of renters aren't being trampled in the interests of the landlord class?
That's a good question. Because I firmly believe that the changes Labor made in government to interest deductibility and to the bright line test and to a code of renters' rights and to things like improving the standards for warm, dry homes massively advanced the legal position of renters and helped people get into warm, dry homes. Labor has always believed that everyone deserves an affordable, warm, dry home. And National is proving in government that it simply doesn't believe in home ownership anymore, but it's also not going to help renters who are now, under their settings, going to be long-term renters to actually rent securely and make sure that those houses are fit for kids to grow up in.
I don't know. I understand that they've got that part of the equation right, but what we did see at the same time, apart from the dip in COVID, we did see houses, you know, increase at a record rate, rent increase at a record rate that's been surpassed by the current rate. By the way, how do we get that balance right next time there's a left-leaning government?
Yeah, well, you know, I think rents under the Labor government were really a economic function of rising wages.
Yeah.
You know, you hear Treasury reporting alongside the budget that they expect rents to go up, but that is not a product of National making choices which pushes wages up, unlike Labor that chose consistently to put the minimum wage up. What Treasury are saying now is driving up rents is a construction slump, coupled with internal migration. So what we're really seeing in the economic picture is that while Labor was in power, rents were going up, that's true, but wages were continuing to rise faster than rents.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, as a proportion of housing costs, people on low and middle incomes weren't paying more. What we're seeing now, though, is that as all of the heat comes out of the property market and the construction sector is having a really bad time, instead of propping up that sector and making government decisions to improve construction numbers so that the housing builds can continue, we're seeing the government cutting infrastructure projects, which cuts off the work for the construction sector and means that the 1 in 10 Kiwis who work in the construction sector are also losing their jobs.
1,500 jobs lost in the construction sector, in the construction industry this quarter. So, you know, what we do know is that that sort of impact takes years to fix in terms of the skill base to build not only houses but infrastructure, Arena.
Exactly, and that is a 3% decline of the construction sector in this year. But what's really concerning is the Treasurer are predicting an 11% decline in the construction sector next year. We haven't seen a slump for the construction sector like this since the global financial crisis, and it's very concerning. Anyone who remembers our construction sector at that time knows that it recovered much slower than those other sectors and was a real handbrake for development in New Zealand of all kinds. It was a problem for business, it was a problem for consumers, it was a problem for everyone, and the government needs to get behind those initiatives which Labor brought in during the recovery from COVID, like the apprenticeship boost program, but instead they've halved it.
That's right. Hey, look, and just yesterday we had a survey out, for basically funded by the Retailers Association, and what their spokesperson said is that consumer confidence is dropping to record lows, not post-COVID or COVID lows, not 2007, 2008. They're talking about 1987 when it crashed.
Yes.
When it crashed. And do you think part of this is not just the reality, but the fact that this government spent such a long time and continues to talk down the economy, Martin?
I think that it's more a case of when Labor were in government, they borrowed money in large numbers and huge numbers to protect us from a once-in-a-century pandemic.
Mm.
When this government has come in, they are borrowing more than Labor ever did, but they're borrowing it for tax cuts.
Mm.
And I think that there's an economic reality here with this particular game. We saw it with Liz Truss in the UK when they implemented very free market ideas and there was a shock to the market, possible threats of downgrade. I think that that's where we are now economically. It's not so much that National have talked the economy down. The economy is in serious trouble.
It's added fuel to the fire, though,
they've done, that's right, they've just dumped an entire base of gasoline on it. Rather than borrowing as they should have for infrastructure, they've just done it so everyone gets a $20 a week tax cut. Well, that's not going to do anything.
Yeah, but even that's not a truism. If you earn $100,000, you're going to get $20. If you earn $75,000, you're going to get $15.
Of course.
If you're on the medium wage, and it proves what a low wage economy we have, $49,000, you're going to get about $2.50.
Yes.
So it is a regressive tax system that they've pushed forward, Arena.
Yeah, that's right. And there's also what Bom is saying around this government borrowing for tax cuts is also having an effect on high interest rates. That's what's really driving these very low consumer confidence numbers, is because people are seeing any gains being eroded by very high mortgage rates. And that is a function of what the Reserve Bank needs to do in a situation where the government is creating economic stimulus when it should in fact be retracting that. But targeting spending, I mean, the IMF has said this very clearly in New Zealand. What needs to be happening is targeted spending for those who are feeling the most pain at the moment. So things like investment, proper investment in early childhood, proper investment in education to keep those sectors going for a recovery. That's what needs to be happening now.
Arena, when are we going to see policy development and policy announcement coming out of Labor?
Hey, cool question. Yep. That's something that I'm really passionate about. I see it as a big part of my work to make sure that I'm thinking really carefully about the policy issues in my portfolios. That's why this week you see a bit from me on supermarkets, because I am the Labor spokesperson for Commerce and Consumer Affairs. And, you know, we're working on that. Our leader's been out saying we've got a blank piece of paper, we've got a blank slate, and we need to come up with fresh ideas. What we really learned from the election was that the people want to see new ideas from Labor. They want to see bold policy. And I think we'll get there soon.
Just talking on that supermarket situation, help me understand, because you are a far wiser person than I. I would have thought that the Commerce Commission was given all these extraordinary powers in capitalism to be able to smash up duopolies, to smash up monopolies. I'm not looking for socialism from Labor. I'm just looking for basic regulated capitalism. And isn't it required for us to be able to have a supermarket chain in New Zealand that may be state-backed, that provides, because New Zealand's capitalism has always been so small, it's always created monopolies and bubbles, and that to be able to prop up that free market, you actually need solid backing from the state, and that maybe a third operator that is backed by the state,
yes,
maybe lots, bring in lots of iwi providers. Yeah. You've got a kai shop or what have you that goes up against the big boys, that's focused on providing better food security for our whānau, providing better conditions for workers, providing better outcomes for the growers themselves. Is that idea just too radical?
We do need supermarkets that are focused on bringing prices down for consumers and are probably competing with each other. And that was why Labor and government last time brought in, really three big things to regulate our $25 billion sector better. The first was the implementation of a grocery commissioner, whose job it is to make sure that the supermarkets have that focus in mind about bringing down prices for consumers. The second was a code of conduct, which was really about making sure that suppliers and consumers were being treated fairly and that their margins were not essentially price gouging. And the third was to remove those unfair property covenants. And we've seen this today reporting on the Commerce Commission's decision to take on foodstuffs about conduct which was anti-competitive under those kinds of settings that Labor has banned. We need to see more of that from the Commerce Commission, and it's really good that they're taking that case. But what I am worried about is that the government will let a merger of foodstuffs, two sides of their business, sail through on Friday, which would ultimately see more consolidation.
Absolutely, and more consolidation. And the opportunity for community, hapū, iwi, government to back third-party initiatives even more limited. Hey, Arena Williams, Member of Parliament for Manurewa, thank you very much for joining us this evening.